the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello and welcome to this January 2019 edition of Education Now. It is with great pleasure and delight that I welcome the return of Gay Adelman. As well as working hard to keep for-profit charter schools out of Kentucky, Gay has kept her focus nationally as well and works hard to keep us all informed about top news in public education. She recently returned from the LA teachers' strike and broadcast live video from the event. I love this quote from Gay. When you are used to privilege, equality feels like oppression. So welcome back, Gay.
Thank you, Athena. Thank you for having me back on your show.
Oh, it's just such a pleasure. I've been looking forward to it. Now, some talking points now. Could you, in addition to charters and scholarships, tax credits, can you tell us some more things that Kentucky is dealing with?
Oh, yeah. It's just been an it seems that the privatizers have discovered the things that make Kentucky schools special and unique, and they've made it their mission to undermine everything that works in order to make sure their schools have a competitive edge once they do finally get fully implemented here. For example, I don't know if you remember this, but in 1990, Kentucky really kind of led the education reform movement. We had an act called KERA, the Kentucky Education Reform Act, and it really brought about a lot of great changes and improvements to our school system, because our Supreme Court said that we weren't adequately funding our schools and that it was that funds were disproportionately being allocated. And so we created, one of the things that came out of CARA was SEEK, which is an acronym for basically the money following the students, regardless of the district they live in. And so the poor rural schools were able to get the kind of funding that our wealthier urban schools were getting, so they were able to afford the textbooks and the teachers and the improvements to their facilities, and it really, really changed the dynamic here in Kentucky. And another major improvement that came about as a result of KERA was something called site-based decision-making councils, and I think Kentucky and maybe one other state are the only two states that successfully implemented site-based decision-making councils, but it's basically local control. It's decision-making that happens at the school level. So you have a site-based decision-making council who is elected or through, depending on if you're the parent rep or the teacher rep, there's a process to get the members of the council elected. And then those individuals have decision-making authority over the hiring of the principal, over which curriculum they're going to implement, over dress codes and schedules, and really, who knows your school better than the people in the school? And instead of having the state or even the district dictate that everybody must have this cookie-cutter implementation of curriculum and programming, the site-based decision-making council has the ability to customize what works best at the local level. So, and in a district as large as Jefferson County, we have 101,000 students in our district. With a district this large, it really makes sense, because the superintendent can't possibly be in all of these schools and making all of these decisions that can truly affect outcomes. So that's one of the things that's on this year's agenda, is to destroy and obliterate our site-based decision-making councils, because they are unique to Kentucky and they're special, and they hinder privatizers' ability to ram their own agendas down our schools' throats. So they'd like to see them removed.
Yeah. Well, I understand that today your team is fundraising for postage to send letters to the site-based decision-making council members across the state of Kentucky. And you want to make sure they know about the ill-informed Senate bill, SB3, with firsthand accounts of how SBDMs actually work and the unintended consequences the bill will create. Can you tell our listeners more about this and how they can donate if they're able to help out?
I would love to. Absolutely. So we have acquired a list of site-based decision-making council members in 160 different schools across the Commonwealth. And in order to reach them in a timely fashion, we don't have their email addresses, so regular mail is going to be our best hope. And we're currently on a legislative recess, so our legislative agenda, our legislation assembly, we call it the General Assembly. So our General Assembly resumes next Tuesday, February 5th. And the bill has already passed the Senate, so it's headed to the House. So what we're trying to do is get something in the mailboxes of the site-based decision-making council members across the state and encourage them to call their House reps and tell them firsthand accounts of what happens when you make these changes that have been proposed to this bill. For example, one of the changes I told you, I think I mentioned principal selection is one of the key features of the site-based decision-making council. So they want to take that away, that power away completely, and give it to the superintendent, which I understand why you would want your superintendent, if they're responsible for what happens in the district, they need to have some say over the hiring of the leader in that building, but they have the ability to choose which candidates are sent to the SBDM members. So they've already been involved in the narrowing of the selection. They send a delegate or themselves. They serve on the SBDM panel. So it's supposed to be a collaborative process. And the reason that many of these changes came about from SBDMs is because we really have a lot of, unfortunately, we have a lot of corruption in Kentucky and a lot of good old boy network opportunities. And so the principal selection process was really carved out this way so that superintendents weren't hiring their brother-in-law. They would push it down to the local level so the school had more control over what happened. And so they want to take principal selection away. And they also want to, there's a clause in the bill that allows for, that prevents teachers from being involuntarily reassigned to another school mid-year if they serve on the SBDM council. And the main reason is because oftentimes teachers will go against their principal. If there's a swing vote and what's best in the best interest of the students is more in line with what the parents are wanting that are on this committee, the teacher may be the one that flips the vote and goes against her principal, his or her principal. So we have a lot of retaliation in Kentucky. I'm sure that's a national thing as well, retaliation and retribution. So the clause that prevents them from being involuntarily transferred mid-year really allows them to speak up for what they truly believe instead of simply just doing what the principal wants them to do. So they're taking that clause out. And so these are just some of the examples of the attempts to undermine public education. And to answer your question about how they can contribute, which I really appreciate you giving us the opportunity to do that, we have a website. It's saveourschoolsky.org. Mm-hmm. And if you visit our website, there's an article right at the top that says help with our 2019 legislative agenda. And the three main things we're focused on for our legislative agenda. If they're not able to help in time for our postage drive, that's fine. We've got lots of things that we're trying to continue to fight the remainder of this session. It's a 30-day session, so we've still got 26 days of fighting left to go once they resume on February 5th.
Yeah.
And we also want to prevent the funding of the charter schools. And so we've got other efforts going on related to that. You know, we've got postcard campaigns. And so there's printing costs associated with the postcards that can, that their constituents can fill out. And then we also want to prevent the implementation of scholarship tax credits, which are really vouchers one step removed, so that you can't actually see the money going, you know, from the state fund to the schools, the private schools. But we know that if you're getting a deduction, or it's not even a deduction, it's a dollar for dollar write off. So if you owe the state $1,000 in income tax and you donate it to a private school, then that's $1,000 you're not paying in income tax anymore. And the income tax is what goes into the general fund, which half of the funds that go toward education come from the general fund, or half of the general fund, I should say, goes toward education. So it may not be a direct removal of the funds, but it's indirect. It's still the money that we count on to fund education and roads and government services. So you can donate on our website. Just click that link for the 2019 legislative agenda, and we encourage monthly supporters. You don't have to make a big donation all at once, but you can commit to $25 a month or whatever you're comfortable with, and that helps us budget and plan. So even if you can't make a big donation up front, you can still help us plan, knowing that in March or April we'll have received enough money from donations to pay for our printing costs. So we may go ahead and pay for those costs out of our own pocket, which is what we've been doing for the last 3 years since we've been in existence. We're a volunteer-run organization. We don't get grant money. We don't get big donations from labor or privatizers or whoever the pro-public education equivalent is of the privatizers. I don't think there is one, because there's no money to be made in saving public education. There's only money to be made in siphoning funds away. So this is truly, truly grassroots, volunteer-led, and then the volunteers
in the long run there is,
and pay for it.
In the long run, there is money to be made by supporting you, by everyone, you know, persons who have money, if they just would think ahead about how they want to have an educated public to choose from,
right,
when they're hiring in any field. And so in the long run, it would be good.
That message is short-sighted here in Kentucky as well, and probably across the country. The chamber, for example, gets behind undercutting our pensions for teachers, and they want to get everybody converted over to 401ks. So our chamber leaders even are short-sighted, especially
right,
at the state level.
Right. Well, when you mention corruption in Kentucky, I just think of Mitch McConnell. I mean, you have to deal with Mitch McConnell. I mean, a bigger slime, you know. What a slime. That man has done so much to destroy this country. And so few people realize how connected he is to organized crime and this whole Russian connection. So, you know, and who knows if they'll ever find out. It's certain that the media isn't going to tell them, because the media is controlled by a lot of their donations come from these same people who want to privatize and deprive our the American people of a true democracy.
Very true.
Yeah. Well, okay. So thank you very much for bringing us up to speed on that. Now, do you think that Mitch McConnell is going to be in the Senate for a long, long time there? Is he going to...
I wish I had positive news for you on that. I've lost a lot of faith in our voters because we do continue to vote against our own best interests. And I think I explained to you on the last program, last time we talked, that there are a lot of single issue voters here who vote for or against a certain issue based on their religious beliefs or their moral beliefs. And it may not even be an issue that can be affected here at the state or local level, but they can't possibly vote for a candidate who, you know, has come out in favor of gay marriage, you know, equality for marriage regardless of gender. So
That's so sad. That's so sad. I mean, I can't believe there are people that are that narrow-minded, and they don't see that, you know, that there are children and young people and older people all around them who are, you know, gay or transgender.
I mean,
what are they have to stay in the closet, right?
Yeah, and what is it hurting them? Like, why would we want to deny someone else happiness when it's no skin off of our backs one way or the other? You know, it's just very, very judgmental. And so I see a lot of that here. And unfortunately, I'm concerned that our voting patterns are probably not going to improve anytime soon. But I do see a lot of people, a lot of Republicans here who are saying, wait a minute, I voted for Trump and he promised me this and instead this is what's happening. And so maybe they'll eventually start talking and figure this out. But and I'm a little more optimistic than you, I think. I do think that eventually this is all going to come out, the Russian connection and Mitch McConnell and Trump and all of this. I just don't think they can hide from it forever. So
I don't either. I hope
they keep digging.
I hope the Mueller investigation comes, you know, it looks like it's winding up, and I think that should turn a lot of people around gay. I really do. Well, okay.
I do too.
Let's now talk about heroes in
depressing
public
things.
Pardon? What?
Not talk about those depressing things.
Well, there's a lot of things to be depressed about in public education right now. And so far as I'm going to, you know, it's like it can't get any further down. It's got to go up now. That's how I feel about it. So I look for always for a heroes in public education. And I think of you. I think of what you're doing and how amazing it is. And I think of Mandy Manning, who was Teacher of the Year in 2017. And I think of Donna Yates Mace, who started Wear Red for Public Ed. And you know, and those are some of my heroes. For sure, Phil Cantor from Chicago, who's talked to us so often about Chicago and what's happening in Chicago schools. And I was really proud of the Chicago's Teachers Union that they got as far as they did the last time. So are there some heroes in public education that I miss that you'd like to add to my list?
There are a lot. There are a number of individuals who, when I first became more aware of what was truly happening in education, Susan Caldwell Carlson with Save Our Schools New Jersey was one of the first people that I reached out to, and they helped us really kind of get Save Our Schools Kentucky off the ground. Mary Pierce in Boston, when that proposition to increase the number of charter schools and raise the cap was being proposed, and they soundly defeated that. That was probably 3 years ago. They were some of the names that I just simply started searching on the internet. What's happening in these other states, and what are they doing about it? And those were the names that they were bloggers that had come up, you know, and really helped me see the parallels.
Right. Diane Ravitch. I see. Yeah, she's done so much.
She definitely has.
Yeah, we talked about
her. My first encounter with her was at the NPE conference. I heard about this conference and thought that I remember when I signed up to go, I couldn't wait to go and tell everybody else about these awful things that were happening in Louisville, Kentucky, thinking that my situation was unique, and to learn from others, you know, what they're fighting and what they would do in my situation. And instead, when I got there and started listening to the speakers and the people sitting around the table with me, and I realized that, oh my gosh, I'm just a babe in the woods here. Look at what they're dealing with and how much further along everyone else is, because this has been happening so much longer to them than it has to us. And then the light bulb, that's where the light bulb went off for me, was at the NPE conference 3 years ago, because that's when I realized that all of the negative things happening in my little district, with the big district, we're the 30th largest district in the country, but all the things that I was frustrated about were really manifestations of the broken on purpose agenda. So, yeah. You know, the large class sizes, the cuts to funding, the high stakes testing, and using the data against us to punish us and harm our students and harm our teachers and harm our schools and close our schools. And it just never occurred to me that this was really a top-down initiative. And then, you know, as it became more clear with Betsy DeVos and her agenda, it all clicked. And it's clicking for a lot of people now. I'm just really inspired by what I'm seeing happening across the country in Arizona and Chicago, as you mentioned. There are a lot of grassroots leaders that have taken their unions, you know, the rank and file voices of the unions are being heard. And that's where I think these successes in cities like Chicago are happening.
Well, you mentioned Betsy DeVos, and didn't she just, you know, she just said something about all of our problems in public education will be solved if the unions don't have any power.
Yeah, her quote was a little bit more along the lines of the unions are the only ones standing in our way.
Uh-huh.
And that I found to be very offensive, because I'm a parent. I am not a union member. I'm not a teacher. I'm a parent and a taxpayer, and I will be right there with everyone else, have been right there with everyone else, standing in the way. We do not want our schools and our students used for profit for billionaires, period.
Right.
End of story. It's
Which she is. She is a billionaire.
Just a piece of it. Exactly.
Yeah. And she made her fortunes on these fake, colleges that their diplomas are worthless. Well, you talk about the LA teacher strike. I so much enjoyed your video, and I just, you know, were you inspired when you were there? Do you feel?
Absolutely. I already had a trip planned to California to visit my son, and then when the strike was looming, I was really riveted by just the messaging that was coming out of LA, the progress that we seem to have made in this movement, where we're now saying, you know, that this is not just about teachers' pay and pensions, but it's actually about funding education, it's about smaller class sizes, it's about art and music and all the things that we need in our schools to be successful. And so when the strike was kicked off and I knew I had a flight coming out later that week, I guess secretly I was hopeful that it would still be going on. Not because I didn't want them to get what they needed, but because I wanted them to hold out until they got what they needed. And so when we landed on Friday, I told my husband the first thing I want to do is go downtown. So that's exactly what we did. We collected our luggage and we picked up the rental car and drove downtown. And he dropped me off at one of the street corners so I could get really close to the action. And I got to talk to the teachers and parents and students that were, you know, they're wearing red and standing with the LA teachers. And I was just, it was very exciting to be part of that history live and in person, because it's something that I'm optimistic that when push comes to shove and it's time for Kentucky to do the same, and especially if it needs to be Jefferson County, because we are one of the larger districts in the country and the largest in the state. I am hopeful that we will have what it takes to do it here as well.
Oh, I sure hope so.
Because that's fine.
Now, yeah, you went to visit your son who's living in California in that area, and is he working in that area in technology or
he is he's working in that area. He's still exploring his career path though.
All right. Well, it's a great time to explore. You know, when you're young
single.
Yeah, and single, right.
Absolutely.
Well, now, I understand that there might be an Oakland strike. Have you heard about that?
Yes. I have heard some rumblings about that. Yep.
Does it look promising, do you think?
I hope so. You know, it's really hard to tell until their messaging gets broadcast more widely and their true leaders step forward and... I'm optimistic that people are learning, and each one of these actions grows and builds on what others have accomplished. I've heard some back and forth on LA as to whether or not they truly got everything that they deserved and wanted, and time will tell, and they may have to go to bat again, and just as everything plays out across the country. We've got Denver, we've got West Virginia, we've got possibly some more backlash in Oklahoma that hopefully they don't end up, you know, they're talking about taking away teacher certification if teachers strike again in Oklahoma. The power grabs that are happening as results of retaliation for people exercising their rights is horrifically frightening. And I hope that it doesn't temper the mood, but if anything, it strengthens the movement. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Right. So your West Virginia strike was successful. How about a Virginia strike?
Yes, Virginia. I have heard that they've got a date set, do they not?
I think they do. Is it next week? Next week, is it? I'm not positive. I'll check up on that, though. Now, you know, you've done so much confronting the rampant racism that is flourishing in our country right now. And you experienced it head on there in Kentucky, right?
I have run into it a number of times. I've been excommunicated, I guess, from organizations that I've been a leader in because I wanted to address race and others weren't ready. But now it's interesting. Those groups are now talking about race and they're still not talking to me, but at least they're getting it now, and that's all that really matters. So it's been a challenge. It definitely has been a challenge, but I'll be the first to admit that I myself, when I first got into this work, really thought these race discussions were a distraction. You know, this isn't about race. You know, this is about funding and testing and all these other things. But dang it, if everything we did didn't keep coming back to race, you know, and the systemic oppression and the institutionalized decision-making and the things that are just things we take for granted that we don't even know to question them anymore. Right. The more I started digging down and trying to solve a specific issue, something would come up and I'd be like, it's a race issue. Right. If they would, you know, hire more African-American teachers that look more like their student population, then maybe we wouldn't, you know, like things just kept, the bells just kept going off. And I finally realized that we have to talk about this and we can't fix the periphery without fixing the root causes of these issues and expect them to be solved. So
you're just so right on. I saw two things I wanted to tell you. One was on on Democracy Now! Today, I heard from Amy Goodman in her headline news that they found all of these files about Mumia Bujumal's trial that were never allowed to be seen, and he, his lawyers, have petitioned to be able to look at those files and readdress his, you know, the conviction. And the district attorney says he's going to deny him that. He's going to deny him and his lawyers that. Isn't that something? And then the other thing I saw that just, I couldn't believe it when I saw it, and I want to go back and look at it, but it was time to call you, about Trump suggesting that public funding be given to schools that will teach the Bible?
That sounds like something we're already doing in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And it doesn't surprise me, because many of the things that Trump does, our governor does first. It's almost as if our governor is a little test market for Trump's ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, after all, you know, if Mitch McConnell's there, and this whole thing, the way that racism fit into this whole thing with the at the White House during the marches there, when the Women's March, and then the counter, you know, the counter a march for, you know, a choice, you know, and the and that group of high school students who had come there from Kentucky, who had been to the rally, you know, to deny women choice, and
wearing their MAGA hat,
right, and they wearing their the Native American, the indigenous movement had an AIM, American Indian Movement, had that part that at the lowest base of the Washington Memorial, that was where they were supposed to have their rally and march. Well, and then there were these black Israelites who wanted to confront the mega hat wearers, but they were also, you know, they were also racists against whites. And so, according to Phillips, he was trying to defuse the whole thing, and that's why he got into the mega hat wearing teenager who looked like Kavanaugh as a teenager,
looked and acted, I would assume.
And you know, in his face, and then. Yeah. When everybody was outraged when they saw the footage, well, then Mitch McConnell paid his PR firm to you know, redo the tapes, right? To tamper with the tapes so that it created a different story.
They did the same thing with the White House press conference. With I'm drawing a blank on his name.
The guy who media person that Trump told couldn't come back. You know that he couldn't. He was kicked out of the press corps.
Yep.
Yeah, they did the same thing, and it was so laughable, and then. The next thing that they did was that they dug into the past of Phillips and found that, you know, he had had struggled with alcoholism. And so they were saying, you know, oh, you know, how can they take the word of this alcoholic who says he was afraid? But they didn't mind taking the word of Kavanaugh the alcoholic.
Yes.
You know, the contradictions, the contradictions are just...
Yes.
Stunning and repulsive.
The hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy.
It really is.
And the diversions. You know, let's go to war. Let's go invade another country. And let's put our nose
Build
in their
wall.
Business. Yeah, you know, let's stick our nose in their business to you know, to get people's minds off of what's happening in our own country. You know, mm-hmm. let's do that. Let's do that. When and we won't pay public servants, and they're just supposed to think that's okay. That's okay if I
right.
don't get paid, you know?
Right.
I mean, this is my country. But of course, Trump didn't give up his salary.
No. And the arrogance of assuming that no one is suffering while the government is shut down for 30 days just
right.
because they have the privilege of not living paycheck to paycheck
right.
doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of hardworking American citizens who are harmed by this shutdown.
Right.
And when we were traveling to California, we asked the TSA agents if they were having, you know, shortages or what have you as a result of the shutdown. And they said, no, things were going pretty good. And we said, well, you are getting paid, right? And they said, no, we're working for free.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they will get their back pay. But to not know and to then still have to pay for your gas and your food and your, you know, all of these things that you're not getting a paycheck like you normally do. So
right.
you're having to make some sacrifices. And that might include not being able to come to work because you don't have money to repair your car, you know, when
right.
it breaks down. And 35 days is a long time.
Yeah, of course, the contractors will never get paid. But I understand what my understanding is that it's because the flight, you know, the pilots said they were called in sick, you know, a whole slew of them called in sick, and so a whole bunch of flights had to be canceled. And so these diplomats,
yeah.
you know, these diplomats and these business people were inconvenienced, and that's when Trump decided that, oh, he would reopen it, you know.
Yes.
He would reopen
yep.
it for 3 weeks, you know. Just so creepy. I really highly recommend Amy Goodman's show today on Cohen, Ray Cohen, who was a mentor to Trump. And it is just explains so much. I can't recommend it enough to you. I hope you see it, Gay. It's remarkable. I hope a lot of people see it because it just makes things so clear. And everything that this...
I will check it out.
And this is the guy who was McCarthy's, you know, whispering into his ear all of the time, you know, who was responsible for frying the Rosenbergs. And
wow.
And he was gay, and so was McCarthy, but they were in the closet, and they delighted. It's almost like sadomasochistic, delighted in telling Reagan not to support the AIDS, you know, any AIDS research, and of course, Reagan has a gay son, you know, but still,
yeah.
you know. And so, but when he was dying of AIDS, when this mentor to this guy that they're just indicting, who was a Trump's committee, you know, and when he was dying, Trump, even though he said he was his mentor, right, and he said, they're doing the whole thing. What I need is a Ray Cohen. Where is he when you need him? Well, you know, he was dying of AIDS, and Trump dropped him like a hot potato. And he said, that's what Ray taught me to do. That's what Ray taught me to do. And they said, well, why do Americans love him? Oh, well, Americans love a scoundrel. I mean, it's just, oh, wow. It was just... heavy duty, but it made all kinds of sense.
Well clearly we do, because
yeah.
we got one for president.
Yeah. So you know, your goal is to raise at least $900 to cover postage and printing cost to over 7,000 SBDM members at 160 schools across the Commonwealth, right?
Correct.
And they can pledge their support by going to just by going to the Facebook page for Save Our Schools Kentucky.
True. We have a donate button on our Facebook and on our website, yes.
Right. And I want everyone to know again, I told them before that that Gay had done LBI Buzz, Marketing Maniac, from February 2013 to the present. And Beach Haven, that New Jersey comprehensive marketing firm specializing in WordPress websites, domain registration hosting, search engine optimization, social media management, and more. And she lists some of her clients there, and which include the Academy of Shawnee Challenger Learning Center in Louisville and 18 other nonprofits in passports to LBI. Now, I thought it was also interesting that one of the congressmen who told people who were having a hard time and had to go into food banks during the shutdown, why don't you just go get a loan? Why don't you just go get a loan, you know? And I can't believe this. And in his comments about the students from the Catholic high school, you know, and confronting the Native American, and, you know, with a smug face and so disrespectful. Oh, there's no Native, of course they can't sympathize. There's no Native Americans in Kentucky, which is Kentucky is like, that's where the whole Trail of Tears started.
True.
So much for knowing history.
Well, and
go ahead.
They hired, I don't know if you caught this, they hired a PR firm. So as soon as that news broke, they reached out to a law firm, I mean a PR firm, to write a letter that explained what happened in their view. And the law firm is connected to one of our, Scott Jennings, I think is his name, who used to be a reporter here, and now he serves on Trump's cabinet or something. He's somebody in the Trump administration now, and I think he's tied to McConnell. And
right.
So there's just really all these shady trails. And then on top of that, that's classic privilege. If you can hire a PR firm to spin what happened, then, you know, clearly you've got affluenza and do resemble the Kavanaugh story quite a bit. And then in his letter, it even stated on like three separate occasions, things like, I had no idea why they were looking at me that way, or I had no idea. Well, clearly, it's because you're not, when you have no idea about why a social justice movement is happening, the last thing you should do is insert yourself into it and try to affect the outcome, which is what it really appeared to me that they were doing. And if they have no idea, then that's when they should back away and ask and be an observer as opposed to a participant.
Right.
I see a lot of that.
Yeah, there wouldn't have needed to be any language, just from the body language and the face and everything.
Yeah,
I knew what was I knew what was going on, but then they got everyone to deny what they knew from their own eyes, what their own gut told them. They got people to deny that, which is so sad. Well, I want to say that Save Our Schools. Page is saveourschoolsky.org, and Save Our Schools Kentucky Facebook page, they have a Facebook page, and Save Our Schools has a Facebook page. So you can find both Save Our Schools Kentucky and Save Our Schools on Facebook. Pardon me. I also want our listeners to know that they can download free anytime at my website, and to please join us on the Education Now Facebook page to leave comments and join the conversation. And that Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, which we started in 1994. Education Now is a proud supporter of the American Montessori Society, and their websites are 3wsamshq.org. I've told Gay, I'm sure, and I've told our audience before, that I started Education Now to work for public education. Because once my own children were, you know, out of my home and we had done our job, and we closed the school, then I dedicated this show, Education Now, to empower parents and teachers and students to take back public education. It was taken from us first by Ronald Reagan in the late 70s and 80s, and the rest of the country just followed his lead. And now we need to take it back. We know how to do this. We know how to do it. We just need to get these leeches out of public education. Well, Gay, you want to leave us with some wisdom this time again?
I don't know if it's wisdom or not. I do have a couple of epiphanies or things I would like to share with your listeners. First, I'd like to also add to the work that I do. I've also recently started doing work with an in-house print vendor, and they are offering printing. They have a digital press. They have a banner and magnet large format printer. We can do yard signs, embroidery, laser etching. So there's a lot of additional marketing products that are available, and a percentage of the money that is spent comes back to funding our work as well. So if you've got any listeners that are in the market for any of these products, if they can reach out to us, we'd be happy to give them a bid. Our bids are very competitive, and we have speedy turnaround and good quality. And then
they would do that where would they do that? Now, where would they go to do that?
So they can find me through Save Our Schools KY. The organization that we're doing the work through is called Digital Promotions. So they can also look us up at digitalpromotions.biz, B-I-Z.
Great.
And then just a little epiphany that I would like to share is, you know, kind of at the beginning of the show, we talked about the revelation that I had when we were just trying to do things at the local level and stop stop the harming of our public schools, and that's when it really opened up our eyes to the agenda. So if your listeners have something going on at their public schools that they're frustrated about, which may seem totally unrelated to the privatization agenda, they might be surprised if they start trying to work their way upstream and solving these problems, whether it's behavior issues or, you know, we've got a large number of behavior issues right now, but the reporting doesn't match the stories that we hear. So there's just when something doesn't make sense, when there's a disconnect, push on it, push and start asking more questions and ask to see the data, ask to see the, you know, get other parents, start a Facebook group in your own community where other parents can come and share their stories so that you can kind of connect some of the dots, because more than likely, if there's something that just doesn't make sense in your school or in your district, there's probably some kind of sinister agenda. It sounds really conspiracy theorist, but we don't have to guess anymore at what's driving this broken on purpose agenda. And again, if your listeners just want to bounce an idea or a concern off of somebody that's been through this and really kind of has started to see, oh, when you see this, it's really because this is happening. It's a cut to funding, or it's too much emphasis on test scores, or, you know, and really kind of tie it back to who's driving this, who's pushing this. Even if it's legislation that may seem harmless and well-intended, if it's the same cookie-cutter legislation that we've seen in these other states, it's really easy to pinpoint it. So I welcome calls from your listeners that if they just want to do a little bit of detective work and they don't know where to start, you can give out my phone number in the links if you like, and people can call me. I'm happy to help.
All right. Well, I want to say that I know that, you know, now that, you know, like national numbers are coming out about how students, you can track the number of students in the classroom, you know, to the test scores. You can track, you know, the schools in the poor areas. You know, they're the ones that have the lower test scores. So we know that this whole thing is connected. The numbers,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, in these areas where we really need the lower class sizes, you know, so you can really individualize, right? We don't have
right.
it. And the same thing about the arts, you know. We have known for I don't know how long. I mean, it's intuitive that the arts are the container for all of our repressed feelings. They are the container.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we've cut all of that out of our schools. And then we wonder why there is such a surge in mental illness in our schools. So,
yes.
And now the evidence is coming out. Not that it hasn't been there all along. We're reinventing the wheel, but if that's what it takes. Okay,
yeah.
Right? Well, thank you so, so much, Gay. And I'm sending you cosmic love, and I'm sending cosmic love to all the listeners. And this is Athena Melville, the host for Education Now, reminding you all to follow the child, which is a quote by Maria Montessori, and saying goodbye to Gay, who I admire so, so much. Thank you, Gay.
Thank you. The feeling is mutual.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.